United win the Carling Cup.
Oh, I've got so much time. It's rather United win a corner than England win a cup.
Yeah. I'd rather United win a game.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Run of Play podcast, a fresh take on football with no filter, no censor, and no suits. No Abby this week, so Liam, Cameron, and myself, Elliot, today are alongside Adam McCullough. You'll know Adam as the man behind Full Time Devils, which is now Stretford Paddock. We're going to be taking a look at some of the biggest talking points from the weekend of football, with the return of the Champions League, and lots of chat about United. If you're not following us already, please do on at Run of Play Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
So, thanks to Adam McCullough for joining us. It's great to open the show. Obviously, a huge Man United fan who must be buzzing after last night. For people that might not know, though, thought we might as well just start with, you know, how you got into Full-Time Devils, how it's progressed, obviously turned into Stretford Paddock now, and your role in sort of the Manchester United fan base. It's a big one. But yeah, welcome to the show. And if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's great to be on. It started for me by accident a little bit. I know there's a lot of people that kind of, they do media at university and then they find a way in, like an internship and go through it that way. But I kind of just accidentally found it. I was obviously a United fan that was going to games, not every game, but I was going to like almost every home game, and occasional away games as well. And then I was working for my dad. I just finished uni. I was working for my dad, who kind of works in a property company. And I was just sitting on Facebook messing about, and I seen a post say, like, if you're a United fan, get in touch. And it was obviously because Johnny and Alan had put posts out there. They were part of the team that started the channel. Right. And then I spoke to them on Skype, and I was just like, get us involved. I had no media experience. I'd done a law degree. And I didn't really know what I was doing. My first video was on Skype. And then from there, because I was at games and because I was just like, let's do this, it kind of just snowballed from there. And I was sending in videos off my phone. And eventually we got to doing a cameraman. And my role kind of grew from being part-time, just on camera, to being a presenter, being involved behind the scenes, doing social media. And from after like 2 years or so, it kind of just became my world. So yeah, it was an accident, but it was good because I felt like I've kind of been preparing for this role all my life. Like, yeah. if I asked the question, like when I do like appearances or I go on someone's shows, I don't really ask. I don't really care what we're going to talk about because most of my opinions are already there. Like they're already made up, or if it's on something in the past, I already have that there to go to. So it's kind of like something that is the perfect world for me. I don't have to revise. I don't have to read up on anything. I could just give my opinion.
I was going to say, it's great that you don't care about what you say because we chat absolute waffle on here as well. We would have a clue what we're talking about.
The best way, mate, just blag it.
Sounds like it. I think like that's what we're doing so far. Talking about sort of how things are going, obviously you said, you know, you've been a United fan, you were going to games before like your career took off in this way. Probably the glory years that was. How do you feel about how things are going right now and this season? Obviously last night was big, but taking it all into account.
I try personally to be level-headed. Obviously, sometimes my emotions will boil over or I'll get angry about things, but I always try and focus on the 90 minutes and then focus on the bigger picture, because sometimes your emotions over that 90 minutes can make you cloud your opinion on the bigger picture. Like, for example, with Ollie at the moment, I think the start to this season was disastrous. It was dreadful. But I never really wanted to overreact because I felt like you had to put it into context of no preseason, you know, towards the back end of last season, you could tell everyone was done in. It wasn't a great summer. So you kind of had to put it into context, and I kind of waited to kind of build my opinion. And like what we're seeing now is United have done okay in the last week. So if I would have lost my head last week and just jump down this. I'd be looking like an absolute tit this week. So I try and realise that football changes very quickly. And whilst I'll get things wrong and I'll get emotional, I try and just be level-headed because I'm a supporter as well. Like, even if I disagree with a United fan, ultimately, both of us want the same thing. So why am I going to be here arguing with United fans and doing all this? So I just try and keep a level head and just give my opinion. And then obviously, in my other role, on a match day, which obviously been reduced now, but just when I speak to fans, I try and allow them to just speak, like just give them a platform for their opinion, because my opinion doesn't matter at that point. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's down to what they're saying. So I kind of like give them the platform to be able to say what they've got to say as well. And got to remember, it's not about me. Do you know what I mean? It's about United.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think talking about that reactionary stuff, like I was listening to the radio with my dad actually the other day in the car, and it was talking about like after United beat it was Newcastle, wasn't it, at the weekend? And they're talking about it, and it was like this guy, I don't know who it was, one of those talk sport presenters, was like, well, do you know what? I think I said last week that Solskjaer's got to go, but after that win I can see him getting top four. And it's like, if you hadn't scored those three goals in the last 5 minutes, and you'd end the game before that would have been the Spurs game. Do you know what I mean? And let's say Rashford doesn't score that last night. It's like you said, it's certain things on a knife edge that take things from, yeah, like you said, Ole being back at the wheel or like the whole club being up in flames. So I think you're right. It's an interesting one to sort of, I think now, especially with the way United have been,
when I go on some shows sometimes, I don't know about you guys, ever done something and you're just going on to give your opinion on your club, and you'll feel like if things are going negative, you'll feel like they're trying to poke you to try and get.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so tell me about Ali. Like, you know, like, what are you trying to get out of me right here? Like, do you want me to just lose my head right now? And I feel like I always try and disappoint them and try and like bring them back down a little bit after hype train and after absolute like euphoria. Like, because everything's always either the best ever or the worst ever, isn't it? It's never, there's never a middle ground. Like, Martial's my favourite player. Like, when he played, like, I thought he was amazing last season. But, like, this season has been a bit off it. But people will be like, oh, he's awful, we need to replace him. When you actually look at it, he hasn't been that bad in games. He just hasn't scored. And it's just the way football is, I suppose.
One week it's Ollie's at the wheel, and the next week the wheels are off.
Yeah,
after the United game, wheels are off. After the Spurs game, sorry, the wheels are off. And now Ollie's back at the wheel again. That's all you hear. Where does that come from, by the way?
I mean, it's exacerbated.
Where does Ollie's at the wheel come from? Is that just a chant?
Yeah, it came from, it's Stone Roses, one of the covers of that. So it came from that. It's a great chant, but it's kind of been tainted now. Like,
yeah.
We saw Arsenal did it, Emery's at the wheel. We saw everyone jumping on it and absolutely hammering us. So we've kind of stopped singing it, but I'm waiting for that moment where we could just, I don't know, he's got a trophy or something and we could sing it again.
I was thinking that today. Well, I was thinking it in terms of, I can't wait to just get back in the stadium and just chant anything, literally anything.
Yeah. Knowing that we'll go back and United will get battered first game back. And just, oh, I wish I was
that's
at
it.
Home.
There are some games where you watch them and you're like, I'm so glad I'm not there. And there are other moments where you're like, oh, I wish I was in the stadium at the moment. But
I thought that the West Ham game at the weekend as Spurs fan, it's like when that Lanzini goal went in, I thought, do you know what? I'm gutted I'm not going to White Hart Lane at the moment, but I am so glad West Ham fans aren't in that away. They'd have been in there behind that ball when that had gone into that top corner. It would have just been, it would have just been the worst thing ever. It
would have been horrific.
But then you could have been in the away end for 6-1-8 old
fans. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
How much of it do you think is there being no fans though? Do you think, for example, United comfortably beat? I thought we deserved that win against PSG. But do you think we have that performance without fans? Like, do you think fans being in the ground changes the way these players are playing?
I actually said to my grandpa, I was watching the game with the West Ham game. I was like, we're lucky. This is at 3-2. We're lucky that the away fans aren't there, because if they were, we would definitely concede. And then obviously we ultimately ended up conceding. But it definitely makes a difference. The stats, I think we said it last week about the stats of away teams winning has like trebled or something versus before fans weren't allowed in. 100% makes a difference, I think.
Yeah, that away You know, the benefit of being at home is definitely sort of gone in this time, I reckon. But I want to go back to just that reactionary element of football, which is just exacerbated by social media, isn't it? Because if you think about match going fans, you go, oh, we lost, okay, cool, go home. Like, you know, you don't really talk about it too much, or you know, you look at the bigger picture. But because everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got access to voice that opinion, it just makes every situation look bigger and look worse than it is, doesn't it? So on the transfer window, so I mean, you said there's no, you know, you can look at it and there's either the best or the worst for the transfer window. What category does that fall into? Because I think obviously you ended up with Cavani and Telles, and but not the Sancho that everyone maybe thought you would have. Is it? How would you rate it out of 10?
This isn't us just trying to poke you either, like we mentioned.
Yeah, this isn't a poking question.
It's a genuine question.
I mean, when you look at I look at it two ways. Yeah. The way we did our business was awful, and that's why everyone felt negative about everything. Like, I feel like if United went into the window, and let's just say, first month we were like, oh, Cavani's done. We've got him on a free as a backup striker. We bring in Telles, we bring in Donny van de Beek, and then we spend some time trying to get Sancho, but ultimately it doesn't happen and we sign these couple of younger lads. I think people look at it and think, that's not a bad window, you know. We've got a left back that we wanted. We've got a backup striker, we needed that. We've got some depth and creativity. Okay, we never got the centre-back and the right winger we wanted. But the players themselves, like Alex Telles, I don't think I've seen someone beat the first man with a corner since 99 or something. Like, like his delivery was excellent. Like, and he's showing that he can bring something to the team. Donny van de Beek, I think he's a player that's going to, I think he's going to be playing for United for years to come. Like, his intelligence on and off the ball is something else. And even in the glimpses that we've got to see of him, I think I've seen that. Cavani is like, I saw people getting excited about Chelsea signing Thiago Silva, Arsenal signing Willian. I think he falls into that kind of similar category of, you've got an experienced player who knows where the goal is, and he'll sit on the bench. Sometimes he can come in and challenge us. So I think the signings we made aren't bad, but because of the way we did our business, because we've spent, let's not just say this transfer window, we've spent 18 months fannying around with Jadon Sancho and are we going to get him, are we not? We knew Ollie wanted him last year. We knew how much they wanted for him. I think it was a little bit more last summer. The price was then 120 million euros. Like, okay, if you're not going to get him, just say that at the start. Like, I don't know why we dragged it on, and United are just, we're not run correctly. I think everybody can see it. I think all non-United fans see it. United fans see it. You wouldn't get these clowns running the football side of any football club anywhere else. Like, could you see Ed Woodward leaving United and a football club going, hey, come and be our CEO because you've done such a great job? Commercially, I think he's done an amazing job, but how much of that is just the fruits of Fergie's labour? Do you know what I mean? Like, from the
stature of United as well.
Like, how much of that is that? So I just feel like we know what we're dealing with here. It's no surprise to United fans. Obviously, we always hope that, you know, something will be different. And it kind of felt like Sancho was a tap-in. Like, even if they messed it up, somehow we'd get it over the line. I think, I know, you guys have obviously, did you think Sancho would sign for United in the end? I think everyone kind of thought it would happen, like, and it didn't. It was a mess. So I think Cavani, Telles, Donny van de Beek, I'm excited about them. Amad Diallo, Traore and Palestri, I don't know enough about them, so let's see what happens. But the manner of our business was just dreadful.
Just moving on to the rest of the week and the week's football beyond United. I think just firstly, we've saw the start of the pay-per-view games this week, and I just wanted to put it out there as to, do we think that anyone in their right mind is paying $14.95 for, was it West Brom versus Burnley, which ended 0-0, coincidentally, but just in general, I think, you know, it's a really bad look for the Premier League, bad look for the clubs that it was even approved in the first place, and seems really out of touch. Has anyone else gone onto Sky Box Office? I did not. No.
I'm glad none of us bought it. That would have been awful.
I bought the package.
Wasn't there a United game on
I think United Newcastle was, wasn't it? No, the weird thing for me, right, was like, one, the braveness to go, right, we're going to do it on a weekend where we're going to push Sheffield United, Fulham and West Brom, Burnley. Like, firstly, that was madness. But also, like, they won't release their numbers, will they? Sky. I think it was either Sky or BT who got asked to release their numbers, and they said no. Like, oh, it's like commercially sensitive information or whatever.
As if they don't. What a line.
When they get, you know, when they hit, like, you see these things like the BBC, like an FA Cup game hits 7 mil or whatever it is, or like a BT Champions League game. Gary Lineker's the first one tweeting about it, saying like, oh, blah, 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 blah. So it's
or Eddie Hearn with the pay-per-view numbers. You're always waiting for pay-per-view numbers release.
It must have been terrible because, like, I just can't, especially right now with like the wider situation, right? It's like, who has got 15 quid spending all those games? I saw a thing where it said if you bought every pay-per-view game, right, if you were that much of a Premier League fan, it would be cheaper to get flights to Australia, stay in a B&B in Australia and watch all the games on Optus Sports over there. Yeah. And it's like, how can they justify that? And none of them will put their name to it, so they know it's a like morally wrong decision as well. So I just don't get why
it comes at the wrong time. Why with big what's that thing called? Big picture. So it comes at a bad time, doesn't it, for PR?
My uncle was sharing us photos. He just moved to Australia for like a year, and he was showing us photos of signing up to Optus Sports, £8 a month for every single Premier League game. And I think he was saying you get Champions League games involved as well.
Champions League, Europa League, everything involved.
I mean, I know the market.
Insane premium.
I know the market's different, and they've got whatever it is, AFL over there. So maybe it's not the most popular sport, but surely it's like, I don't know.
Surely being popular should make it cheaper, right?
That's what I don't know.
Surely it should be more expensive for them and cheaper for us.
Yeah.
Well, everyone talks about how, you know, the Premier League, if they went and did their own Netflix style, like, or even, you know, Amazon and how they're doing it, if they did a £10, £15 a month subscription, all of the Premier League involved, they would lap it up. It would be insane the amount of subscriptions that they would have, and they could do it globally. There wouldn't be any restrictions on, you know, on Sky and BT, and they'd probably make more money than Sky and BT bidding for these games, like, overall, but with all of the subscriptions that they could sell. It just baffles me that we're at this point where, yeah, you're paying £15 for a game just to watch it, when you really should be paying £15 a game to actually go to the game. And I know that's not possible at the moment, but it does make me a bit sick that 19 out of the 20 clubs actually said that it was a good thing to do. And shout out Leicester for saying no.
They're always good, Leicester. They did when their chairman was still alive. I know they still do stuff now, but like when they get like the beers for each game, wouldn't they? Mm. And like when they went on that mad run, when they won the league, they were like doing stuff for the fans to prize them for it and all that. I think touching on fan bases, I wanted to ask you this one, Adam, just to get your thoughts on the obviously last weekend, the Merseyside derby, obviously not involving two teams that you're particularly that interested in. However, the reaction from Liverpool fans to the Van Dijk, well, what is now the Van Dijk ACL injury. What did you think of that? I saw some amazing things on Twitter.
It's incredible.
It's over the top.
It's incredible that we're like, I laughed then when you mentioned it, and I'm not laughing at his injury, but I'm like, it's gone from being, oh shit, that's sad. Do you know what I mean? Is out for a long time to fucking hell. Look at these idiots, how they're going on about it. Like, it's just like, I don't get it. And I'm sure there's some Liverpool fans that are like, bloody hell, these like don't help. Do you know what I mean? With how they're going on. But it's like, even the punditry reaction to it, I just found bizarre. It was like, he's the only player that's ever got an injury. And I thought Pickford should have been sent off. I'm not a huge fan of Jordan Pickford anyway, but I thought that was a shocking decision. So I thought that probably didn't help the reaction of the fans, because they probably felt like some justice needed to be done to Jordan Pickford. But you've heard of death threats to Jordan Pickford. You saw that dude posting saying, you see that one short Instagram post?
He's like, I live near, my promise is just like, what is it? A Sean promise is a real promise.
What in the hell is going on? It was this bizarre, but it's blown the title race wide open.
Yeah, that is true.
It's one of those, because like the whole, you know, footballing, the football fans were all really behind them, and the fact that they had two shocking decisions, maybe three, go against them in terms of the offside wasn't, you know, like no one wants that to be offside, really. Like if that's any other club than your club. but Everton fans as well loved that, but it's and the red card decision, which most people obviously thought it was a red card, to the point where you say, like, now people are like, oh, just shut up, like, just be quiet about it now. They've really dug a hole for themselves, haven't they?
It's an insane ability to be able to do that, like, to be able to go from a place where people should feel sorry for you to a place where they're like laughing at you. Like, your reaction has to be insane for it to move, for the like conversation to move away from feeling sorry for Virgil van Dijk to just laughing at Liverpool fans.
Because it's not just the fans either. What did Klopp say? The players have struggled sleeping this week. Did they think Pickford was going to come two-footing them through their door or something? Like, what is it like?
That's the thing. They say that and they're like, oh, if he did that on the street, he'd be arrested. And it's like, yeah, but no, if you did anything on the football pitch on the street, if I went up for a header in Tesco's, yeah, I'm going to get... Do you know what I mean? It's like anything you do is like...
Anthony Joshua did his job on the street.
Yeah, like, yeah, imagine that. Imagine if Anthony Joshua was sparring in the street, you'd get in trouble. Like, of course he would, but that's not... It's just, yeah.
What was Pickford doing, though?
He's done it before.
He has done it before.
Dele Alli. Dele Alli didn't go down, surprisingly.
Oh, yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
There was a compilation of images, wasn't there? Compilation of images of him doing it before. I saw a piece of analysis from Rob Green, though, which I thought was interesting, that, like, obviously the keepers' union and all that kind of coming together to sort of back him, and they were saying, well, you know, he's lucky at the ball when he makes a decision and it's a bad tackle, it probably should be a red card, but, like, he isn't, you know, he is looking at the ball the whole way through, but, you know, it's just... You can tell that he sees him in the corner of his eye and he knows he wants to put one on him, even if it is just going to, you know, take the ball and the man. He wants to just give him one, and it's such a horrible tackle to watch, isn't it? You watch it again and you're like, oh, it's horrible.
And I think the bad thing is that has taken away from the fact that the offside goal, like, what is this keeper playing at? Like, every week he makes a bizarre mistake. And he's England's number one. Like, I when you got all these goalkeepers around the country, I genuinely just don't get it.
I mean, you don't have Nick Pope, you don't have Dean Henderson even, or, you know, making these types of mistakes each week, yet they're the ones sitting on the bench.
I even think Ben Foster's better than Jordan Pickford.
That's fair. Makes less mistakes.
He was linked to United to replace De Gea, and I just remember thinking, please, God, don't do that. Like, he scares me. And he sits there shouting and screaming. He reminds me of Joe Hart.
Yeah, it's a similar personality traits.
Why do England always go for these type of keepers? What's going on? Why can't we go for a nice, assured keeper like Nick Pope, who's not going to cause any problems? We always have someone who's a complete nightmare in goal.
Well,
always making mistakes.
Talking of keepers, Chelsea don't trust Kepa enough to let him be their only keeper in their Premier League squad, and they've named Petr Cech as a backup goalkeeper. Apparently, he was on like a—I don't really know—some kind of contract. What do you think of that? Like, he's not that bad, Kepa, is he?
Absolutely love it.
I think it's great. When I saw that, and I thought, because you were saying, Cam, he's younger than Caballero.
Yeah.
So he's like, he's actually that old, but like, I just think it's slightly the disrespect to Kepa. Like, he's, you know, when you're saying you feel sorry for Phil Jones, Adam, I have a little bit of that for Kepa. Like, you know, when a player, I had it with Maguire actually when he got sent off for England as well. You know, when you can tell a player is just in a rut and they're just like, nothing's going for them. It almost goes to the point, it's like, bantering off a player can be funny when they're doing quite well. And you're effectively, it's that thing like, you're like laughing up, you're making a joke up because you're laughing at a professional footballer. But like, when you see like Kepa in goal now, That one against, was it Southampton when he just slid into the post when he could have just picked it up? Yeah. And it's like, you sort of look at me and think, like, he is not making decisions that, like, the decisions of, like, Norman, who's a professional keeper. Like, he's trained all his life to be a keeper, and he doesn't save any of the shots that go near him. And I just think, like, I do feel a bit sorry for him, but I for the, like, even though it's Chelsea, like, for the culture, I think if Petr Cech could get a game, you know, if a few things do go wrong and they have to play him because he's registered, that would be better than when, like, outfield players have to go and goal if they brought him back and he just couldn't dive to his bottom corners anymore.
In his reading glasses.
Yeah, in that hat still.
It's madness to be... It's crazy, isn't it? He's literally a member of staff.
Yeah. Technical director.
It's like Ajax putting Van der Sar in their squad or something. Like,
yeah, that's a good
I know
question.
He's retired recently, like, but...
Yeah.
I just... Especially when you've spent so much money this summer as well. What happened... Is Mendy... What happened to Mendy?
I think Mendy's back. He's back now. He played last night, but yeah, they were saying it's because of coronavirus and, like, if they had an outbreak and stuff like that, they want to be careful with goalkeepers. But it is crazy. I can just imagine Petr Cech.
Wouldn't you play like a youngster? But then I imagine,
yeah, that's what I thought.
Petr Cech might be part of the first team bubble. Is that trying to bring sense to a stupid decision? I don't know. Like, but I just surely you'd want to give one of your kids a chance. Rather than
one thing I wanted to ask Adam was obviously just sort of like looking at what you know, the sort of work you've done before and this idea you spoke about at the start, you know, fan channels not being not always being seen in the best light maybe, and when thing, you know, there's always this argument, like I saw it even this week with Spurs fans when they were getting abused because people were saying that they sort of like profit off of they do best when things aren't going great, and Arsenal Fan TV have had that as well, but I think what you guys do is very different to that. And I sort of wanted to get your views because obviously Manchester United with Liverpool have been pretty at the centre. There was the Project Big Picture and now they sort of seem to be the ones driving this European Super League idea as well. And sort of as a fan who was going to all the games, who is like one of a very select few Man United fans who like really is everything that a fan would have been in the olden days, right, as well, and a sort of a local fan who's not watching from overseas or anything like that. How do you feel about that? Do you sort of think, obviously, that it will sort of increase global appeal? And what are your thoughts as someone who sort of built a fan channel around what is now one of the sort of like most commercially, like, it's one of the most commercial clubs and one of the most maybe unaware clubs as well?
They're aware.
Do you think?
I don't think they're unaware. You have to, these people aren't stupid, you know what I mean? Like, they are aware of what they're doing. Mm. They're aware of the decisions they make. They're aware of their disregard for fans, and I don't think it's a disregard for fans, but I think it's a disregard for match-going fans. Like, for any club, I think in the Premier League, their match-going fans are what percent? Like, especially for Manchester United, what percentage of the match-going fans are?
Yeah, less than 1%.
It's so small that it doesn't really matter to them. And if anything, they also chasing non-fans around the world as well. So, you know, people that are just buying the Premier League product. I'm not for a European Super League. And I think, you like people say, it will enhance the game and the reputation of the game around the world. Does it, though?
Mm.
Like, does it? I don't... What's wrong with the Champions League? What's wrong with the Premier League? Like, you'd think money coming into the game would help improve the game, would help improve the fan experience, would help improve, you know, players' experience. Everyone's experience of this sport should be enhanced by the fact that there's so much money in the game now. But instead of it, like, realistically, most Premier League clubs could let their fans come in for, everyone could come in for a fiver each. But they don't want to do that because they know they can maximise this profit out of the product. So there's a disregard for fans, match-going fans in general. And obviously the money is in, I hate you, like, the bigger picture and those bigger deals. We saw that I think it was about 12 months ago, the bigger Premier League club said, they wanted more money from the TV deal. They felt that the smaller club should have taken a smaller percentage of the TV deal. I think that was the sign then that these guys are going to try and do something. Project Big Picture came in when they were probably thinking, why should we give up £250 million to these bums in the League One and League Two, like, and get nothing out of it? That's how you kind of felt these big teams are looking at it. Like, if we're going to do this, we want to get something out of it. And they were trading that for voting rights. Those voting rights then mean that they can change the way the TV deal is run. They can change how much percentage goes to those smaller teams. And then it becomes, like, not even a monopoly. It just becomes these bigger clubs are just getting fatter and fatter. And are they getting more successful? If all the best teams in the world are playing in one league, how many people can win that league? Do you know what I mean? Like, you can, at the moment, you can have Liverpool or United or Chelsea or City winning the league, Real Madrid or Barca. It's going to become soon that just one of those teams are successful every year. Then do their fan bases shrink? I don't think it's actually a good idea. I think it's a short-term gain, and there's no long-term benefits to the sport. I genuinely feel that, like, it doesn't... Maybe you want to get rid of the League Cup, the Charity Shield, all right, whatever. You know, fix congestion in fixtures, in the fixture list. All right, cool. But this doesn't do that. You're adding, what would it be, 34 games if you play them home and away. Well, what is it going to be? Are the games in Dubai and in Qatar and in all these places around the world? Because I ain't going to none of them games. Like, so who are the fan bases at these games? Mm. It's just gone. I think they're looking to kill that, though. Once you kill the core support, you then just have, like...
It almost gives you the excuse to do everything else, doesn't it? It's almost like if that core support is something that disappears and is no longer something that's just sort of for them to sort of worry about, right? It's effectively a hurdle to a lot of these changes. If you said if it is about maximising profit, it's always like, oh, but what are the fans going to think? What are those local fans going to think if they have to go to all these away games?
An Americanization of the sport, isn't it?
Yeah, look at, I think massively. Look at Spurs Stadium, you see that. Though.
Look at like Lakers and Miami Heat. Like, I've been watching the NBA recently, but like I'm as casual as it comes. But I'll buy a jersey here and there. Mm. I'll tune in. Like, these are the kind of fans that they want. Like, they don't want the people that are going to be going every single week that want to pay £10 to get in, that want to pay £20, they want to cap prices at £30. They want to maximize everything, and they're not going to be able to do that way.
Even just going to like the pure appeal of football to fans, like, isn't the whole, like you said about the Champions League, isn't the whole appeal of that is the fact that you have to earn your right to be there. And to earn your right to be there, you have to have beaten 20 other teams in the league to actually get there. And then you've got that right to say, I am the best, or sorry, whatever club is the best. And we are therefore the best team in Europe. But are you the best team in Europe because you have the most money? No, that's not appealing to me. It's like the Nations League. There's nothing in it. It's not like, yeah, we could win the Nations League in England, but wouldn't be as good as we want if we won the World Cup. I don't know. Just from all angles, just seems like a bad
one, though, because that does give that. I like the Nations League for the fact that it gives the smaller nations a chance to qualify. Yeah. But I think one thing, like, when you just said about the Americanization of the sport there, like, it is an interesting one. So I think I was talking to Ellie about this, plug in the last podcast that we did. But no, he was saying that, you know, you look at it and in America, not in, you know, the NFL, whatever it is, they don't really have away fans, right? So you go to your home team's game. This is just mainly because of the geography of America. But you go to your home team games, great, you support them there. That becomes your sort of like mecca, that becomes your home. And then away games are filled with, when your team's playing away, they're filled with fans of that club and casual fans. And so it's like, it is an interesting way if that's what we're looking at. England's so different because everywhere's so close and all the, you know, it's, you're only sort of 5 hours away from any ground at any point. But it is an interesting thought that they think, you know, in 15, 20 years, if sport just has completely gone that way, there is a very good chance that away fans just aren't a thing at that top level. There'll always be a level of football where it's happening. But like you said, at that very elite level, I think we could just look back on this time in sort of 20 years and just think, well, everything else was pointing that way, so we can't really be surprised by it.
Also, it's not even the best teams or the greatest teams. I was looking at like what teams it was supposed to be earlier, and I saw PSG and no Marseille, and I was thinking, PSG are bigger than Marseille. Like, if you look at, you know, the teams from England, like City and like Spurs and like, So who decided these were because I would have thought, hold on, Aston Villa have won a European Cup. Nottingham Forest have got a couple. They're quite big teams. Aren't Everton as big as City? I know City have had recent success, but what is the clout? Like, how did Spurs inherit Jose's European Cups? Like, I don't, what has happened to make these decisions?
Yeah, the last 10 years determine the whole future of where your team lies? Is that...
Because like, it literally is the richest club. It's not the greatest club. United will probably finish bottom of that league. Like, what the hell? How are you going to sell that, Mr. Edward Wood, to your commercial sponsors when we finish bottom of the fucking European Super League. Like,
you just have to get another like tractor sponsor in or something.
But there's no relegation, so they'll love it.
this is the thing, because like, you know, you can say, well, the Premier League, the top six, there's a bit of a monopoly between them anyway at the moment now, which is probably could be a way that they're looking at it of like, well, you know, the top six have sort of cemented themselves anyway, there's a little opportunity for teams to sort of impact that, but it would just happen again in a Super League where you'd have, you know, your Bayerns and your Real Madrid sort of just dominating that, and then you would have, you know, your Tottenhams and your Uniteds like just battling at the bottom, like really. And it, but it's also, you know, the other side of it, it takes away from those Champions League nights where you're like, you know, you have those big games against big opponents just like once in a blue moon that you can really get on board with, and as fans, but not just as match going fans, but just as, like, you know, we wouldn't see the fact that, you know, Messi and Ronaldo are going to play against each other in the Champions League is just like come down from pure luck. If you saw them play against each other every week, yeah, it would be great, but it takes away that special feeling of, oh, that's an incredible game that has happened, you know, out of pure luck, and you know, we can enjoy it on a one-off basis, and really, you know, those games become a lot more special. It just, I think there was, it was over, I can't remember exactly who said it, maybe Bergkamp said, well, it's just going to be boring. Like, eventually, like, the first season might be great, but, like, second season, how boring would it be just to see all those same teams just play over and over again where you don't get any other, you know, Champions League games that come out of it? So overall, it's just it just seems like a terrible idea. Was it Edward Wood that came in and said he didn't know where the rumours had come from, and he thinks the story's not got any substance? But I feel like that's just him being...
You can't believe a word he says. Can't believe a word he says. And like, if you look at the owners of Manchester United and Liverpool, like, I hate people keep saying Manchester United and Liverpool want to do this. No, they don't. It's the Glazers, and who are Liverpool's owners? Henry something yeah, like that. It's like, it's these guys that want to do this to the game. It's not Manchester United and all their supporters and Liverpool. Like, we're all just kind of getting dragged into this mess, and I think it's very dangerous. Like, Project Big Picture scared me because we're giving power to these people, like these big businessmen, over our game. Do you know what I mean? And that their interests lie elsewhere. Their interests aren't in the development of a football, aren't in fans, aren't in anything. Like, their interest, not even in English football, their interests aren't in it. So, yeah, I was scared that they would get a lot of power, and then you start to see changes. And I think this is a reaction to that. They're probably saying, look, if we do one, how much money are you not going to make then? But I actually think if Liverpool and United and all these teams left the English football, I actually think it would probably benefit English football for all those teams that are left. Because I think you'd start to see people just be going like, actually, fuck that. I don't want any part to do with that. Like, it's not the game that I fell in love with. And it'd be, you'd have fans being there, like, having to make difficult decisions. Like, do I support a club that I can't even watch anymore on a weekend because they're flying around Europe all over the place? Or do I just take up a non-league team or a team in it? Like, I think you'd start to see fans having to make that decision. I hope it don't come to it.
I was thinking that this week. Who would be my second team? Like, do I go local or something? I don't know.
I think that decision's being made already for a lot of fans, where they're already falling out of love with football. Even if it's simplistic, like the rules and like VAR, and they're just getting a bit tired of like not being able to, you know, it is tiring not being able to just celebrate a goal and just go mental at something and wait for like VAR to come in. Then you have, yeah, all the money, you know, paying over a grand for a season ticket, which is obviously just ridiculous. So I think there already is a growing majority of growing minority, probably, of people who are going to either non-league or, you know, even watching the Championship more, because, you know, the product is in a lot of other ways more exciting than what the Premier League, and if this Super League came into play, probably could offer in terms of actual enjoyment for fans. Yeah, absolutely, probably see more go to that non-league side.
Anyway, let's end on a more positive note. We managed to get through a whole hour of chatting without mentioning the word 6-1.
Yeah. Already forgot about that. We've just beaten a team that was finalists in Champions League. I think that makes us the second best team in Europe.
I wrote the logic.
It's only as good as your last game, lad.
Don't say that for us. I don't want to hear that.
We're in a relegation scrap.
You know what's crazy? Yeah, this season's going to be nuts. Like, look at it. We got battered by Spurs. Absolutely battered. It should have been worse than that. And if we win our game in hand, we go ahead of you.
Oh, mate, I know. It's just stupid, isn't it? Like, the whole league set up at the moment. Like,
I mean, Everton are top. What the fuck is that about?
Anyone could win it. Everton could win it. United could win it. Villa could win it. Spurs could win it. Anybody could win it.
Go on, who's going to win it then? Predictions. We got to put it out there. Who? Els, you go. Go on. Who's winning the Premier League?
Who's winning the Premier League? Fulham. No. I mean, I might just keep backing Everton. I think if Calvert-Lewin keeps going on, Everton are going to win it.
Oh, DCL is so good. Watch from City signing to replace Aguero.
Oh, mate.
What a player.
All right.
So good.
That's Michael.
I think that I'm going to be boring. I think that Man City are going to win the league. I just worry that I like when I watched them beat. I know it was Arsenal, but I watched them beat Arsenal the other day, and I just the players that they still didn't have on the pitch at the time, and I just think like everyone because they were so fragile last season. Liverpool were also brilliant, and it's like they've almost had a chance to reset City, and I do worry that if the league does remain this chaotic and people are dropping points every weekend, and it does go down to just who's got quality and who can get through most of those games. Then I think it could be them.
I agree. I think City. I think they're just exactly that. It's just going to be who's the most consistent out of the inconsistent, everyone being inconsistent.
Yeah.
And I still think it will be Liverpool and City like at the top and then the best of the rest. We'll see.
Adam?
I think it's going to be a shock, you know. And yeah. I'm not sitting on the fence, but I'm going to say it's going to be one of United, Spurs or Everton.
Oh, I could get on board with that though.
Trust we can me, all get on board someone, with that.
That. It sounds weird to say United winning the league would be a shock, but it would be this season. Like, it's going to be one of those years. Not as shocking as Leicester winning it. But I genuinely... Because teams are just... Well, City are probably the favourites if I was going to put money on it. City. But nothing about them makes me think, oh, I don't want to play City. Mm.
Yeah,
and
no,
I say that,
just
we just got battered 6-1 by Spurs, but like, nothing about anyone in the league makes me think. And now Liverpool were, like 2 weeks ago, I thought, oh my God, they're going to win the league by about 40 points. And then this happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could all change by next week. Yeah, we'll all be like, well, Villa are definitely winning it. Or Fulham go on a complete winning streak.
Do you remember the days when Villa used to be top till like Christmas, challenging United and that? Mm.
When Spurs were mid-table.
Well, who was that manager again? What's his name? Oh, what was his name?
Oh, O'Neill.
John Gregory.
Oh, right.
John Gregory days they were. and Brian Little. Bloody hell. I'm probably older than all you.
Like. I'm not gonna lie to you. Absolutely gone over my head, that reference.
A little bit too young. Adam, you might have, if you've listened to our podcast, you might know that we have a section called Against the Run of Play, where we do a quick fire round where our guests have to say the first answer that comes to the head out of a 50-50. You up for getting involved in that?
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right, the first one's...
Have you got a jingle or anything?
do you know what?
In production.
I might start making one. So let's start easy. Man City or Liverpool?
To win the league, City.
Okay, what about preference-wise?
I hate Liverpool the most out of anyone. So.
All right. Messi or Ronaldo? Sorry.
Ronaldo.
Okay, cool. Nike or Adidas?
Adidas.
Nice. Lampard or Gerrard? You can't say Scholes.
You know what? I've never been asked this question. Gerrard. Unfortunately.
Reluctantly, Gerrard.
Very reluctant. 40-yard screamer or a tiki-taka team goal?
Screamer.
Obviously. And then if you're a manager, would you be a suit manager or a tracksuit manager?
Depends on the game, you know. 12:30 kickoff. I'm turning up in a tracksuit with my hood on, and I'm not. If it's an evening game in the Champions League, you have to put your suit on, don't
absolutely. Like, Wembley games.
I play it by the occasion.
Nice, I like that. And finally, would you rather England win the World Cup or Man United won the Champions League?
United win the Carling Cup.
Oh, I'd rather United win a corner than England win the
Yeah. I'd rather United win a game. Now, you know what? Yeah, England, yeah, I know this is going against it, but my relationship with England is a twisted one. It's like, as a kid, I was like, I loved David Beckham. I had curtains. I had the England shirt. Mm-hmm. Then they slaughtered him in 98, and it kind of just, it killed me. And then I kind of got back on it for 2000, and then they killed Phil Neville. And then ever since then, I've just kind of been like, oh, they can go fuck themselves. But like, the last World Cup, I want them to. This is a more likable England team. Bar the manager, I don't like Southgate at all. I think he's awful. But bar the manager, I think this England team, I like it. Before, it used to be like, if England won't win the World Cup, I've got to see John Terry lift it. Yeah. I don't want it to happen. Like, it was literally those kind of things. Like, and now it's like, if England lifted the World Cup and it was Harry Kane, I genuinely wouldn't care. And I'd probably be well up for the party as well. But United to win any trophy over England.
I'm not even going to pretend I'm surprised by that answer either. I've got a bit of time for it. I think that's us done, isn't it? I think that's us wrapped up. Thanks so much for coming on, mate. That was great chat. We've gone a bit over, which is always a good sign.
Anyway, boys.
Thanks, right, mate. We'll let you go with your evening.
Enjoy
it, mate. Catch you later.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening to episode 9 of the Run of Play podcast. It was great to chat with Adam McCullough of the Stretford Paddock about some of the biggest talking points from the week, the return of the Champions League, and of course, Adam's views on his beloved Manchester United. Please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and drop us a rating. It's much appreciated as always. You can also follow us at Run of Play Pod on Twitter and Instagram for more content. Run of Play will be back very, very soon with another expert guest, so make sure you stay tuned.